This morning, I'd like to offer some commentary on four lines from the Sandokai, which sometimes give people some difficulty. Ordinary life fits the absolute as a box in its lid. The absolute works together with the relative, like two arrows meeting in midair. Reading words, you should grasp the great reality. Do not judge by any standards. Now, I thought we could approach these lines somewhat obliquely by way of a story told about Layman Peng. He apparently lived around the 8th century in China, the time of the golden age of Zen that's recorded in the koan collections. And he is said to have been a wealthy merchant who was able to devote his time to studying Zen under the great master Basso. It's said that he went to Basso asking, "Where can I find a man that's not entangled by the 10,000 things of the world?" And Basso replied, "I'll tell you when you swallow the great West River in one gulp." And with this, Peng was enlightened. If that itself seems mysterious, perhaps you can think of it in terms of him saying, "How can I unentangle myself from all the things of the world and being a rich man?" And Basso's reply is something like, "Don't try to disentangle yourself from the world. Become one with the world. Swallow the world, swallow the great river in one gulp. Right? Eliminate any separation between you and the world." So Peng became one of the archetypes of lay practice in the classical texts, along with Vimalakirti, a model of how even a layman could achieve enlightenment. It's said that Peng, after his realization, put all his wealth into a raft and sent it out into the middle of the river and sank it. And for some reason, his wife didn't kill him, and the family stuck by him even when he made himself poor and then became, I believe, a basket weaver or a sandal maker. In any case, this is a somewhat roundabout introduction to a story of a monk who comes to Layman Peng for instruction. A monk approached the Peng family to see what they could teach him about the practice of Zen. He asked Layman Peng, "Tell me, is Zen hard or easy?" Layman Peng replied, "Very difficult. Like throwing a stick and trying to hit the moon." Now, as you hear the rest of this story, try to hold in mind those four lines from the Sandokai and listen to how those lines are reflected in what follows. Very difficult, like throwing a stick and trying to hit the moon. Somewhat daunted, the monk turned to Peng's wife with the same question. But she answered, Oh no, Zen is very easy. It's easy as touching your nose when you wash your face. The monk was unsettled and he made to leave. But on the way out, he ran into Pang's son and said to him, "Your father says Zen is difficult. Your mother says it's easy. Who's correct?" The son replied, "If you think it is difficult, it will be difficult. If you think it is easy, then it will be easy. Don't make difficult and easy." But the monk was not satisfied. So he went finally to ask Layman Pang's daughter. He said to her, "Is Zen easy or difficult? Everyone in your family has given me a different answer. Your father, hard. Your mother, easy. Your brother, both. So I ask you, which is it?" The daughter smiled. "Zen is not difficult and it's not easy. You will find the great master's meaning balanced on the top of 100 leaves of grass." So I would like to suggest that the four answers we get in this parable offer positions corresponding to the four lines in the Sandika, and that this is a typical kind of dialectic move that we will find here and all throughout Dogen, that we see something is stated as one thing, then its opposite, then neither, and then both, right? We get all these permutations, each showing things, something from another perspective, none of which can be said to be the final or true perspective. It's only the movement and combination of the different perspectives that encompasses our practice. So the Sandikai, the order is a little different. It starts with the position that's articulated by Pang's wife, that Zen is easy. Ordinary life fits the absolute as a box in its lid. They fit together perfectly. There's no gap. This is the easy part. One just is shaped exactly so it will fit onto the other. Okay? And one way we can think about this in practice terms is the idea of each moment that you encounter is the absolute. It's the relative, and that it's a particular thing in relation to all sorts of other particular things. But at any moment, that relative thing can be seen as just this moment, just this thing, the absolute. That was basically Joko's teaching over and over for decade after decade. But then the next line corresponds to Pang's assertion that Zen is difficult, like throwing a stick and trying to hit the moon. Here it says, "The absolute works together with the relative like two arrows meeting in midair." Picture two archers at the opposite ends of a football field, unleashing their arrows at the same time. What's the chance of those two arrows ever meeting, hitting each other in midair over the 50-yard line? No matter how skillful you are, you could do that 10,000, a million times and never have it happen. It's like throwing a stick, trying to hit the moon. And here in Pang's kind of answer, it says, as long as you think of Zen as something separate from you, distant, like the moon, you'll never be able to hit it. You'll never be able to reach it. And that's what happens in practice if we think enlightenment is some rare special experience that we're forever chasing, trying to make happen. As long as we separate out the absolute from the relative and make it a separate thing that we're going to look for, we never see it hidden in plain sight. We don't see it that it's right under our nose. Easy as touching your nose when you wash your face, right? As long as we think that Zen is a matter of cultivating an almost superhuman, extraordinary feat, capacity, like being one of these archers whose arrows will meet in midair, we create an impossible task for ourselves. And Zen is very, very difficult. The sun's response actually corresponds to the fourth line. Do not judge by any standards. He says, if you think it's difficult, it will be difficult. If you think it's easy, it will be easy. Don't make difficult and easy. Is it possible not to divide your world up that way? Right? Just sitting. Neither difficult nor easy, just sitting. Don't turn it into a project that you can do well or badly. I often quote Dogen to that effect, that Zazen is not a technique of meditation. A technique is something you can do well or badly. You can always be asking, am I doing it right? Am I doing it wrong? Is this working? Am I there yet? So the whole realm of techniques gets you caught up in difficult and easy. How do we step outside of that into just sitting? The final position from the daughter corresponds to the line, reading words, you should grasp the great reality. Now that's intended to sound very paradoxical, because the great reality in Zen is something that's supposed to be beyond words and concepts. That the great reality is this realm of not knowing. And yet, it says reading words, you should grasp the great reality. That doesn't mean by reading you should develop some concept of the great reality. It doesn't mean that reading is going to give you a kind of intellectual approach to reality. It means that the great reality is not separate from anything. It's not even separate from words. Say the sun says, don't get caught up in concepts. Don't get stuck in difficult or easy. That in itself inadvertently creates a new kind of dualism. Oh, there's some way you should be not caught up in concepts, right? There's a good way and a bad way. Concepts are bad, words are bad. We've got to avoid those, right? Reading words, you should grasp the great reality, means that nothing lies outside of the great reality. Even all the intellectualization, philosophy, and idle chatter that Zen is supposed to be warning you about, right? Even those things are just manifestations of life as it is. We get caught up in the content of our words, but our talking is no different than the chirping of birds. It's just the sounds that we emit. It's part of our human behavior that at some level is perfectly natural. We don't tell the birds to stop chirping and making a racket, they should all learn to be silent. Part of being a bird is chirping. Part of being human is to use words and concepts. We can get entangled in them. We can make mistakes because of them. But we're not here to try to extirpate that part of our human nature, make all the words and thinking go away. They too are part of the great reality. The great master's meaning balanced on top of 100 leaves of grass. The leaves of grass are like this. All the particulars, all the words and phrases, all the pages of a book, like Whitman says. So the challenge, I think, in our practice is to experience and put into some kind of balance these different perspectives. And there's a way in which we need all of them. We don't think that Zen is difficult. We won't put in the effort it takes. We have to be prepared to think that this practice is difficult, that all those teachers didn't spend years sitting in Zazen facing the wall because they were deluded about how easy Zen really could be. There's something genuinely difficult about our practice. And it means coming to terms with the reality of separation in our lives. That we do not, as we go about our daily life, think this is it. If we're honest, we're endlessly judging moment after moment. This isn't right. This is not the way I want it to be. I'm not who I should be. I'm missing this or lacking that. If only I could be wiser or enlightened or calmer, clearer. All of these are ways that we semi-consciously put a moon up in the sky and look longingly at it and think, oh, that very distant thing, if only I could touch it, if only I could reach it. Right? The difficulty in practice means honestly facing the deep gulfs of separation that we have created within ourselves. And they're not going to be dissolved just with a snap of the fingers. Or at least not with a snap of the fingers before we've sat in Zazen for 20 years. So we have to face the perspective that Zen really is difficult, that we have this deep-seated problem and it's going to take real effort and hard practice to come to terms with it. And yet, if that's the only way we think about it, then we turn Zen into something like running a marathon, and we make it an endurance contest and some great difficult task we're trying to master. We turn it into a technique, and our very efforts will get stymied by the way we frame them. So we need the perspective also. Someplace in the back of our mind, we have to remember Zen is easy. It's like touching your nose when you wash your face. The answer is already automatically there, the way the box fits onto the lid. At any moment, this is already it. We see that, remember it, see how we don't believe it. Over and over and over again. We need the perspective of the sun. If you think it's easy, it'll be easy. If you think it's hard, it'll be hard. Can you practice stepping away from those kinds of concepts? Can you remind yourself Zen is not a technique that you can do well or badly. And you find your way to just sitting. Where sitting is not always divided into the good sittings and the bad sittings, but it's all just sitting. It's neither good nor bad. And finally, the daughter's perspective. We're not trying to make anything go away. The mind is not contaminated by its contents. Our thoughts, our feelings are not problems. We're not trying to wipe the slate clean. We're not trying to, in some way, extirpate some basic part of our humanity. We're not going to say our thinking, our anger, our sexuality, our attachment, dependency, that these are somehow problems that have to be solved, that are parts of ourselves that have to be purified. No, we're going to find the Dharma on the tips of all those blades of grass, all the things that we think of as our problems, till we see that having problems is not a problem. It's just life as it is. Let's see if we can hold those perspectives in mind as we practice together.